o'clock hour, Burns and Gambo show. Thanks for hanging out with us here on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. Gambo, a person is only as good as their word. And Kevin Pelton gave us his word the last time we had him on a couple of weeks ago that on December 1st, he would run his 10,000 simulations of the season, and he would tell us what he thought the Phoenix Suns were going to look like with Chris Paul on the roster.
Yeah, but now that he's run it, are you happy that he ran it or no?
No, I'm glad you phrased
really?
That way, because no, I looked at it, I'm like, that's
that simulator
it?
Sucks.
That's what you had? I mean,
yeah.
We love you, Kevin. We love that you come on whenever we ask, but that's the best. That's the best your computer could do?
Is 38.6 wins. Now, remember, 72-game season, okay? So when you said 38 wins, 72-game season. So that would be 72 minus 38 is 38 and 34 he would have them. 38 wins, 34 losses. 62% chance to make the playoffs. That's what the simulator says. Now, again, I mean, the simulator's not really playing the games. It's fake. It's not real, right?
Of course.
But that's what,
it's a simulation.
You know,
that's all it is, yeah.
Yeah, but people like, some people like this stuff. And there's a reason why, you know, he's employed and he does these simulations. People like it. You know, I mean, all during the bubble when the Suns kept winning games, they kept running those simulations to, now their chances are this. Now their chances are that. So he's got the Suns going 38 and 34 and making the playoffs as an 8 seed. I think they do a little better than that. I mean, personally, I think they do a little better than that. But listen, they got to go out there and they got to play the games. I mean, anything, you know, whatever we say, you know, here in this market, they still have to go out and prove it. Now, they're a much better roster than they were when they finished last season. I think they're a much better roster. So I'm expecting market improvements.
Yeah, look, I mean, it just goes to show the nature of changing expectations. Because if you had said to me at the end of last season, not counting the bubble, but just in general, the end of the 2019-2020 season, hey, next year there's going to be a Kevin Pelton simulation and they're going to have the Phoenix Suns as a playoff team. Man, you take it. I think even now, if you just tell me that the Phoenix Suns are going to be a playoff team, one of the, and not the play-in tournament, but a playoff team, you're one of the eight. I mean, I'd take it. It's been 10 years since we've been able to say that about them. So I'd be fine with it. What are you going to say? Go ahead.
Well, I think what we have to do is we have to take a real look at what the separation is. And, you know, to quote an old employee, not much.
Oh, there's not much.
So the Phoenix Suns are projected to win 38.6. So let's just go within two wins. New Orleans is 39.3. Let me see. New Orleans is 39.3. Dallas is 39.9. Denver is 40. That's within two. The Jazz are 40.8. And then the Rockets are 41.3. So inside of two wins is the 4 seed, the 5 seed, the 6 seed, the 7 seed, and the 8 seed.
Mm-hmm.
Is all within two wins.
Yep.
Of each other. If I count, you know, if I give the Jazz at 40.8, it's basically the same. So it's all within two wins of each other.
And I think that's important. I think that is an important part of this equation.
Right.
That even he's saying the margin between 5 and 8, between 4 and 7. I mean, we're splitting hairs here. We're talking about a very, very narrow margin. And he acknowledges that. He said, look, Phoenix, and it's like you say, it's 38, 39 win season would be good enough. You look at the teams in front of him. It's the Lakers 1, it's the Clippers 2. Mm-hmm. He still has the Rockets number 3, and I think in large part because he can only run the simulation of the players that are currently on the roster. James Harden and Russell Westbrook are still on that roster. So he's running a simulation, and it still says the Rockets are going to win, you know, 41 games and make the playoffs 82% of the time. So he still has them in the top 8. We'll see if they stay there. He's got the Jazz 4, the Nuggets 5, the Mavericks 6, the Pelicans 7, Suns 8. He's got Portland on the outside looking in. He's got Memphis on the outside looking in. He's got Golden State as the 14th out of 15 teams in the Western Conference. I guess Klay Thompson in his simulations means that much to their season that without him, they go from what was presumed to be a top four season all the way down to a second to the last season in the Western Conference. That's how much he thinks Klay Thompson means.
Yeah, and that's, man, that is crazy to think that Golden State would be the 14th best team, you know, just because Steph's coming back, and I think Kelly Oubre's really good. Now, the team right behind Phoenix is Portland at 38.2. So, I mean, you're really talking about 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 teams within 2.5 games, 3 games of each other. I mean, it's going to be, we know this is going to be a dogfight. I mean, we know that. I can't wait to see the schedule because, listen, you're going to have to beat these teams. You're going to have to beat these teams. You know, it's not just, you know, we talk about beating the bad teams, right? You have to make sure that you beat the bad teams. You have to. But it's really going to come down to these 5 teams, how they all play against each other. Dallas, New Orleans, Phoenix, Portland, Memphis. These teams that are all battling, it's how they do against each other. That's those games are going to be, they're going to be wars, man. They're going to be battles because, you know, you know just how important each one of those games is in a 72-game schedule season. They're all so important.
So on this, the first day of training camp, Monty Williams says expectations, pressure, fine, bring it.
We understand that the expectations of this team have gone up exponentially, but why would you want to play without pressure? Last year, for the most part, in the beginning, we had no pressure. And that's not something that I think anybody wants, especially if you're competitive like we are. And so we understand that. We also understand that it's going to come with some scrutiny at times that sometimes it's merited and sometimes it's not. You can't control that. What you can control is your preparation.
Then on this, the first day of training camp, ESPN also kind of ran a Q&A with a lot of their NBA writers. And one of the questions that was posed to them, which newcomer will have the biggest impact on his team? 5 different writers were asked that question, including Kevin Pelton, who's our friend, and we have him on all the time. 3 of the 5, including Pelton, said Chris Paul in Phoenix will be the newcomer that has the biggest impact on his team in 2020, 2021. And it's hard to see how that, you know, the other guys that were picked were Robert Covington and LaMelo Ball. I mean, it seems to me this is the Chris Paul category, right? Who else is going to have a bigger impact on their team than him?
Yeah, I mean, it was one of the biggest moves, you know, in the offseason. I mean, you know, other players changed teams, but look, Giannis didn't go to Miami. Kelly Oubre going to Golden State, no. I mean, the Covington thing, we talked about that. I mean, that's a good move for them. Gordon Hayward going to Charlotte, I don't think that does a whole lot. So, yeah, I think Chris Paul, first of all, he's one of the great leaders in this league. He's one of the great players in this league. He's one of the faces of the NBA, and he still plays at a high level. So him going to Phoenix to take a team that has – and it's not like the Suns have made the playoffs the last couple of years. The Suns not having made the playoffs in almost a decade, yeah, that's why all eyes are on Phoenix and Chris Paul right now.
Yeah, and it's not only Chris Paul, but it's teaming Chris Paul with Devin Booker. And Monty today talked about the step – that he wants out of Devin Booker this year.
I want Devin to be an all-NBA player. I want Devin to be an MVP candidate. You know, that requires a lot. It requires, I mean, how do you improve those kinds of numbers? That's a hard one. But that's what I want for Book. I want him to be all-NBA. I want him to be an MVP candidate. I want him to be recognized defensively. I'd love to see him in the conversation for all-NBA and someday an MVP. And that's going to take a lot of work. But more than anything, I want to see him as one of the guys that's on a winning team. And that's, you know, that's our next level.
But if he's on a winning team, it seems to me all that other stuff follows for Devin Booker, right? The all-NBA stuff and the MVP consideration. That might be a little far down the road for him just yet. But in terms of being an all-NBA guy, first team, second team, third team, you got to be on a winning team first if you're going to get consideration for like that and stuff. That's just how this works.
It's what we've talked about for so long. Win and the accolades come. Don't win and it's hard to get them. You know, you get respect on a winning team. You get your eyes are on you. You might get a Christmas Day game. Well, wait, and I think we could know later today whether they get a Christmas Day game or not. The Suns are pushing for it. Book is pushing for it. You know, I hope they do. I think it would be great. I don't know what the matchup would be. Well, what would be a good matchup? What do you think? Suns versus who?
Suns. Well, I would imagine Clippers. They'll probably have playing
Clippers,
the Lakers. I would think so.
Okay.
Suns.
Suns. Nuggets. Suns. Jazz.
Suns, Nuggets. Suns. Jazz.
What about
one
Portland?
Of those two? Suns. Portland.
Ooh.
I mean those. I think those three probably stand out as potential Christmas Day games, right? Either the Nuggets, the Jazz, or the Portland Trailblazers. I mean, got a lot of star power on all. Nuggets. You know what? If they're on, I'm going to call my shot. I think it's the Denver Nuggets. It could be Suns and the Nuggets
too, yeah.
on Christmas Day. Yep.
I mean,
what
I like
think?
It. I mean, yeah, I would go Denver. But that's part of, like, getting Chris Paul. And now part of people thinking, okay, now they're here's your first projection of the Suns being a playoff team. Kevin Pelton's simulation. I don't know if there's any other projections out there. But I want to see the ones that don't have them as a playoff team. I mean, I want to save these. I want to, you know, and look at it, you know, 72 games later. Because, you know, because the season's starting so quickly, we're going to see all of these predictions in the next week. All of them yeah. are going to come out in the week. You know, playoff teams, who's going to be the MVP, who's your NBA finals, all of that stuff's going to happen. You know, I think the majority of people, there might be a couple that don't pick the Suns to get to the playoffs, but the majority of them are going to have the Suns as a playoff team. So, I don't know, Imani wants the expectations on him and he wants the pressure on him. That's great. But now you got to deliver, right? Now's the, okay, because now the people expect you to be a playoff team. You went out, you spent the money, you brought the players in. We're going to have Jay Crowder on the show in 15 minutes. He's going to join us. The expectations ought to be a playoff team. Anything less would be completely unacceptable.
After another late game miss, fans are fuming about Zane Gonzalez and the fact that he still has a spot on the Cardinals roster. Realistically, though, what can Steve Keim do about his team's kicking situation? We'll talk about it coming up. Right here on the Burns and Gambo Show. There was a roster move made by the Arizona Cardinals today, but it wasn't the one that some people are watching for to see if they're going to make or not. It was Rashard Lawrence, the defensive lineman, the rookie. He was activated. He was made to the active roster from the IR, one step into getting him back into the lineup. Didn't have anything to do with Zane Gonzalez, though, and I don't know when anything's going to happen, if anything's going to happen, but I do know, Gambo, that after what happened this last weekend, the speculation and the question marks and the lack of trust in Zane Gonzalez is going to continue. I mean, whether he's still on this roster or not, whether they make a move or not, if they keep him, the next time he lines up for a kick in a game where you got to have it in the fourth quarter, there are going to be some serious doubts, not only among the fan base, but I got to imagine on the roster, about whether Zane Gonzalez is going to be able to make that kick in that moment or not.
Yeah, there's no question. I think, based on, you know, the information that, you know, that I've tried to get out of this, is just, you know, there's not a lot out there. You know, there's not much better out there. Now, nobody really knows what's wrong with them. They obviously can't continue. For now, he's their kicker. That's the word. For now. Zane Gonzalez is the kicker for the Arizona Cardinals. He's probably day-to-day. Now, if he goes out there and misses another kick, there ain't no way they're bringing him back next week. So if he plays Sunday against the Rams and he misses a kick in the 40-yard range, 45 yards, I think that'll be it because they don't know what's wrong with them. Nobody knows what's wrong with them. They just know that it can't continue. You got to make kicks to stay in this league. So I think, again, right now, the feeling is that there's just not much better out there, and I think it's day-to-day. He's game-to-game.
Jay Feely, our good friend who was a guest on the Doug and Wolf show, was asked point-blank, is it time to move on from Zane? And Jay said the answer to that question is no, it's not.
Hopefully it's not now. I still think Zane has a tremendous amount of ability. I think he has more ability, and his best kicks are better than anything I ever hit. You go back and you say, okay, what was he last year? He was 89% last year. That's an unbelievable year. And I know he's struggled, you know, especially into big moments here this year. And I would just caution, you have to make those kicks. He knows he has to make those kicks. But you can't – who are you going to replace him with? Who are you going to go get? Do you think that there's somebody that you can step out and bring in right now that's going to fix that position? No, you'd be going and getting somebody who's young and inexperienced going into critical games where you have to make kicks. And I think a guy who's been there, who's done it, who's failed, has come back, has their opportunity to make those kicks than somebody who is a big uncertainty, a young guy who hasn't done it before.
And with all due respect to Jay, I do find it interesting. First of all, I don't know who's out there, right? And you just said a second ago, the belief is that there isn't anybody great out there for them to go get. But I do think It's interesting that this whole time, Mike Nugent has just been hanging out on the practice squad. And if there's if the belief in Zane Gonzalez is so strong internally with the Cardinals, then why would they even have a Mike Nugent on their roster? Unless that's just COVID insurance, right?
Of course,
need a kicker, in 2020, it's good to have a guy like that in your practice squad because it's COVID insurance, basically.
I think more than anything, I think Nugent is more COVID insurance. Listen, we went over some of the names yesterday, the veteran guys that are out there that you could go get. You know, Hauschka, Vogel, Tavecchio, Sloman. Those are the veteran names. Now, the question is, there's not a lot. But I do think it really comes down to what me and you spoke about yesterday. Cardinals are in a tie game. It's the fourth quarter. There's 4 minutes left. You have a chance at a 48-yard field goal. If you miss it, they're going to get good field position with plenty of time left on the clock. If you make it, you go up by three, you kick off, they'll get the ball at the 25-yard line. What are you going to do? What are you going to do, Cliff? What are you going to do? It's a 48-yard field goal, but if you miss it, they're going to have nice field position, and they're going to have time. Does Cliff say, you know what? I'm going to punt it. I'm going to go for it, but I'm not going to kick the field goal? Because if you get to that point that you can't trust your kicker to hit you a 48-yard field goal to give you a lead with 2 minutes left in the game, then you can't. You cannot have that guy on your team. This is not debatable. You've got to think about that situation if you're Cliff Kingsbury. What would you do? 2 minutes left, 48-yard field goal to give you the lead. Are you afraid that if he misses it, they've got good field position and now they're 30 yards away from winning the game themselves? Or do you feel confident that he's going to make the kick and that you'll kick off and you'll start them at the 25-yard line? That's the million-dollar question, Bernsey.
Yeah, it is. It is. And if it alters, and on this, you and I totally agree. If it alters in any way, if your lack of trust in your kicker alters in any way your decision-making process in that moment, you got the wrong guy.
Got the
wrong guy.
And this isn't debatable. I'm Cliff Kingsbury. I want to go to sleep tonight and think about a scenario like that, a similar scenario. What the hell are you going to do? And if you don't feel like you could try your kicker out there and kick a 48-yard field goal, we got problems. Big problems.
Here's Jay, and it's
got to change.
Here's Jay again with Doug and Wolf on how exactly the Cardinals should handle Zane Gonzalez, assuming they keep him.
To me, I think the prudent move right now is to continue to focus and help him to be the best that he can be. I think his ceiling is still really high. You know, I know that the Cardinals fans are frustrated right now that he's missed those kicks and the couple of game winners. And, you know, if I look at him, I just say I think he was a little bit – he wasn't aggressive enough through those kicks. You know, sometimes you can get in those situations, you kind of guide him. You know, I think that's why he was short on the one. And I think he just needs to be aggressive. Doesn't mean you're hitting as hard as you can. I would have a little bit of patience.
It's hard to have patience. Right?
These games
it's
matter.
Really hard.
Yep.
These games matter.
Yeah.
And look, I heard Bickley talking about this, and I agree with him. Kickers, in some ways, are like closers in that you only – as a team, whether it's a baseball team or a football team, you only have so much tolerance for a guy who can't get their job done in that situation, right? Whether it's a closer in the ninth or whether it's a kicker, it is hard mentally to stay with a guy like that when he's let you down. It's a position that if they're not doing it, you really lose faith in the guy very, very quickly, whether it's a closer or a kicker. When we come back on the Burns and Gambo show here on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station, what is it about the Suns that made Jay Crowder want to come to Phoenix? And how much did the Chris Paul trade impact his decision? We'll ask the new Suns forward. He'll join us next on the Burns and Gambo show. Very excited here on the Burns and Gambo show. It is his first media interview since joining the Phoenix Suns, joining us right now on the Coulter Automotive Group Sports Line, one of the newest members of the Phoenix Suns organization, Jay Crowder, who joins us here on Burns and Gambo Show. Jay, I'm Dave. This is Gambo. Welcome to the show. Welcome to the Valley. Welcome to the Suns. Thanks for coming on.
Thanks a lot, Dave and Gambo. I appreciate y'all having me.
Well, Jay, such a good player for so long in this league. First, why Phoenix? What was it about the Suns that attracted you to come here?
Well, it was two things, actually. It was obviously being a competitor and going against Devin Booker for so many years, a player like that in our league who is just top talent. He's a top talent in our league. And I just felt like as a player, he's earned my respect on the court, and he's earned their league respect for the work he's put in. And I think it's time for him to play some meaningful basketball. And the way they finished the season last year was everyone took notice. Not only myself, but the whole entire league took notice of how they came inside the bubble and handled business. And I noticed that, and that attracted me to be right here where I am today.
Yeah, trust me, all the Suns fans are very excited that you're here. You're a winner. I mean, you're a proven winner. 72 career postseason games. You've been in the playoffs the last 7 years. You were just in the NBA Finals. I mean, you're all about winning. What about that experience of being in all those playoff games? Can you lend to a young team with a lot of players that have never been in the playoffs?
Well, it's simple as this. It's how you approach each and every day. I feel like your approach to practice, your approach to games, it lays the foundation for those times in the playoffs, well before you even arrive to the playoffs. And I just feel like I want to bring that. I want to bring a level of work my heart had each and every day, so young guys can sense of what it takes to even get to play in the playoffs. And from that point on, how to win games in the playoffs. But it's level to it. I understand that. It's been an 11-year drought here in Phoenix. And like you said, I've been in the playoffs every year. I've been in the NBA except one. So that's why I play this game. I love to play basketball at the highest level. So I just want to do what I can to help these young guys and to get the organization back to where it needs to be, and that's planned for it all.
Jay Crowder, our guest here on the Burns and Gambo Show. I'm curious, how many conversations have you had with Devin about him, his place in this league, and the fact that you just kind of named him as one of the main reasons why you're here with the Phoenix Suns? Have you talked to him about that?
Of course I have, and that was one. He was a guy who he called my phone during the free agency period of recruiting me to come play here. And I feel like that was big for me to hear not only just the organization and the coaching staff call me, but to hear from the players that's on the team. There's no greater respect in this league than you have respect from the peers, the guys who you go against each and every night. And so from getting a phone call from Chris Paul and Devin, it definitely helped me make my decision to come join these guys and try to put it together. So I definitely have sit downs with Devin, and we of course I've seen him since I've been in town the few days I've been here, and we just eager to get to work. I feel like the level of respect is there between us two, and I think it'll trickle down with each and every guy in the locker room that I have for each and every guy in the locker room on our team. So it's been conversation between me and him, and we're eager to get out on the court and get to work.
The acquisition of Chris Paul was a real perception changer for a lot of people around the league about this team. For you and your perception of the Suns, how much did the acquisition of Chris Paul change your perception of the Suns organization and their direction this upcoming season, Jay?
Yeah, it played a huge part. I'll be lying to say it, but it didn't. It definitely played a huge part because I know what he brings to a team. And he's one of the highest level of leaders that we have in our league. And I think it's proven what he brings to a team, to an organization. And I was eager to play with that. I want to play with the guy, a future Hall of Famer. I wanted to play with another one. I know what he brings to the team. I know how he is a winner and how much he puts into his craft, and I respect it. And I feel like I can sit here and tell you guys that he didn't play a factor in it. He did play a major factor in my role coming here. Just because I respect his game, I respect his body of work, and I know what he brings as a leader. And I can learn from him and vice versa. But I'm eager to learn and take the court with him as well as the rest of the guys on the roster.
Newest son, Jay Crowder, joins us on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station, your flagship station of the Phoenix Suns. DeAndre Ayton, he needs the leadership that you provide. He needs the leadership that Chris provides. The ability is through the roof. And we're all waiting to see this kid become one of the top centers in the league, like one of the top one or two. What can you do playing next to him to elevate his game to that next level?
I just feel like I just want to make him as tough as possible because I feel like he's the anchor. He can be the anchor for our whole group. He can anchor a lot of stuff on the defensive end. Obviously, he's going to get touches on the offensive end, but I feel like he can be he's the main part. He can be a main part in putting this thing together. And I feel like we need him to continue to grow as a player on and off the court. Obviously, he's a kid. He came into the league as a kid, but he's growing. He's growing to be a young man, and I've definitely had conversation with him the past few days as well. And he's eager to learn. He said he's been in the gym since he got out of the bubble. So that was great to hear him tell me that face to face the other day that he's been in the lab just working in our new practice gym. So he's definitely has what it takes. The tools, what it takes to be a high level center, if not the best center in our league. And I just want to do what I can to help him and give him the confidence he needs on a nightly basis to destroy each and everybody that comes in his way.
Yeah, I've talked to so many players in this league about what the addition means, you coming here. I spoke with Boston today, and they're like, man, we didn't want to get rid of him. Coach loved him. I mean, the only reason why we just had to get that, the money had to work to get Kyrie. We needed his contract. They didn't want to get rid of you in Boston. They loved you there. And everything that I keep hearing about you is just how damn tough you are, how strong you are, how nobody's going to muscle you down low. Now you'll shoot the three when it needs to. You play with energy every night. I mean, what else are you bringing to the table for this Phoenix Suns team?
I mean, I'm bringing all of that. I'm just bringing a level of a play just to get us as an organization, as a team, over the hump. I want to do what I can. I want to do my job. I feel like in basketball, everybody has a job, and I want to do my job to the best of my ability. And you can definitely depend on me to give it my all. I'll never BS on the court. I'll never BS in practice. If I'm on the court, I'm giving it my all, and that's just how I'm geared. And that's just that I've been able to create a lane for myself, I should say, throughout this whole league. Just a guy who you can depend on. I've always wanted my teammates to depend on me when the time gets tough. Not only when during good times, but also when the times get tough. And I want to be that player that the city of Phoenix can depend on and trust. And I want to help us get to where we need to be. And that's breaking this first breaking the streak of 11 years of not being in the postseason. And from there, building from that and obviously hoisting the trophy one day.
Yeah, it's been a long time. And how much did the three-year deal mean to you? James wants continuity. He wants guys that are going to be here. He doesn't want to sign a whole lot of players to one-year deals. He's got a couple of guys here and there, which you got to fill the roster out. But it was important for him to get you on a three-year deal. How important was it for you to know you're going to be here for the next 3 years?
Well, it was very important for people who don't know the situation. I turned down money on the table, to be honest with you guys, to join this franchise, to join these guys, because I wanted to feel like I was wanted at a higher level than just 1 year. You know, I wanted to build. I wanted to be able to be comfortable enough to build with a group of guys again. And I think I've had that in a few places. I had that in Boston. I've had that in Utah. But I just wanted to build, and I felt like the situation here was unique because I had to envision myself once I got the phone with a few guys from the organization and a few players. I totally envisioned myself playing here, and I could see it. In the other places, the other phone calls I had picked up, I couldn't necessarily envision it. So when I stepped back and thought about my decision, I totally saw myself playing here in Phoenix and helping these guys to the best of my abilities. But I did leave money on the table, and it never was about money for me. It was about the fit, and I feel like the fit here in Phoenix, it was like two people coming together and it's working out. So hopefully it works out for myself. Hopefully it works out for my teammates. But I just want to do what I can to help this organization get back to where it needs to be.
Well, yeah, and that's fantastic to hear. I think I reported at the time, I was told that there was about three different teams that were trying to get you and that you did turn down more money. Was Dallas that team? Was Dallas the team that was offering you more?
Yeah, Dallas was the team.
And why Phoenix over Dallas?
I don't want to get too far into it, but I mean,
no. Let's get too far into it. Why did you choose the Suns over the Mavs?
I chose it because I just envisioned my role. I envisioned a bigger role for myself on this team. I envisioned just when I sat back and thought about it. Obviously, Dallas is a place where they drafted me, and I will always have love for Dallas and the organization, and the coach Rick Carlisle has done a great job of helping me build my career to what it is now. But I envision myself coming over here and helping these guys. I can't tell you why. I just, whenever I sat back and took both phone calls and I hung up the both phone calls, I envisioned myself here in Phoenix over Dallas.
And you're not talking about leaving $50 on the table. You're talking about you left a couple of million on the table.
Yeah, I did. But that's wow. Not why I'm okay. I'm okay with the money. I'm okay with that part. I just wanted to build something. I just wanted to be a part of something special. And I felt like you look at a team that not been into the playoffs in 11 years. I want to be a part of the reason why we got back onto to winning side and get back into the playoffs playoff basketball. And I just felt like it was a greater task here. It was obviously a harder task here, and I just wanted to buckle down and be a part of something special here.
Wow. Good
You're
stuff.
Awesome.
Yeah, Jay, it was nice meeting you over the phone. We look forward to meeting you in person one of these days. I'm not sure when, but hopefully at some
yeah,
point in the
so.
Future.
Yeah.
Right, hopefully soon.
Whenever we're allowed
Good luck
back.
This upcoming season. Yeah, exactly. Good luck this upcoming season, and congratulations again on becoming a member of the Phoenix Suns. We appreciate it.
Thanks a lot, guys. Thanks for having me.
Thanks, Jay. Got it. Jay Crowder joining
How
us
awesome
on the Coulter
was
Automotive Group Sports Line. Yeah, he was good. He was good. Joined us on the Coulter Automotive Group Sports Line, Coulter Cadillac Tempe. Experience the difference. Visit CoulterCadillacTempe.com. That was a lot of fun. That was a real
was
fun
awesome.
Conversation that we just had with him. When we come back on the Burns and Gambo show, we'll react a little bit to that, and then we'll talk about Carson Wentz as well as what was it about Jay Crowder making the decision to come to the Phoenix Suns, and then Carson Wentz and his struggles last night. We'll talk about it next here on the Burns and Gambo show. All right, we'll talk about Carson Wentz in just a second. First off, man, how about Jay Crowder? That was great.
I know. Guy was awesome.
That was great.
I mean,
yeah, that was,
pushed him a little bit on that, you know, turning down more money from Dallas because he wants, listen, I love that. Man, I want to be here. I see my role here being better. I turned down more money. You know, I reported that at the time that he turned down more money, you know, from Dallas. There were other teams interested in him. But, you know, I don't know the exact amount of money, but I know it was millions. Like, he left millions of dollars on the table to come play here.
I mean, to me, it's one thing if you're going to turn down a higher offer from a really bad basketball team, right? If you're talking about, you know, the Sacramento Kings or somebody like that, right? A team that there aren't great expectations of. Okay, that's one thing. Dallas Mavericks. Dallas Mavericks are a really good basketball team. The Dallas Mavericks are some people think they might be better than the Suns this year. A lot of people think they might be better than the Suns this year. To turn down more money from them because you had this vision, and I really, more than anything, I thought it was really interesting that when you asked him why Phoenix, the first thing out of his mouth, it wasn't Chris Paul. It was Devin Booker.
Right.
I expected Chris Paul, you know, hey, they got Chris Paul. Suddenly it changes your mind about the Suns. It makes you look at them and think about them a different way. No, Devin Booker. This guy's going to be a star.
I mean,
He wanted me. He recruited me. He called me. He wanted me to come. That was exciting to hear.
I mean, listen to this. James Patrick tweeted, what a great guy. He literally won the fan base over with that interview. Great job to you both. Another guy, great interview with CJC9 boss, gentlemen. He sounds awesome, humble, willing to do whatever it takes to help Phoenix. Sounds like he's going to work his ass off. I don't think I've been more excited for Suns basketball in my life. One more, Jake Trecapelli. Loved everything I heard from Jay on the show. Going to be a fan favorite from the get-go. Just shows how the 8-0 bubble run and CP3 acquisition has changed the perception of the Suns. Exciting times ahead. They're all rolling in. I mean, I'm getting tons of tweets right now on that interview. He's, fired up after listening to him talk about how badly he wanted to be here, how he took less money, just how excited he is. And he's been to the playoffs every year for the last 7 years. He knows what it's like to win.
Yeah, he's basically played a season's worth of postseason games. That's how many times he's gone to the playoffs. So, again, thanks to Jay Crowder and the Suns for that was the first interview Jay Crowder has given since becoming a member of the Suns organization. So we're happy that it happened here on the Burns and Gambo show, and we hope you enjoyed it. Moving on, switching gears, if you will, to the NFL. An interesting thought that you had, a scary thought. I don't think interesting is the right word. It's kind of a scary thought. A couple of years ago, The Philadelphia Eagles identified Carson Wentz as their franchise quarterback of the future. They moved up in the draft to get him. They got him. He won some games. He played well. They gave him a lot of money, a ton of money, to be their franchise quarterback. This season, everybody expected Carson Wentz to take this big step forward as a quarterback in this league, and instead he's taken a giant step backwards. You think they're having some buyer's remorse in Philly right now?
Yeah.
And is that a lesson for teams who are about to pay quarterbacks a lot of money to be very careful about which ones you give that money to, Cambo?
Yeah, you know, it's just it's so hard to find those guys that are going to win. And so you end up paying Jay Cutler a lot of money for nothing, you know, and the Eagles end up paying Carson Wentz a lot of money for what looks like nothing. And how many times has Matthew Stafford won a playoff game with all the money he's made? And, you know, you just go through and it's like, you know, but there are quarterbacks that are worse. And that's the fear. Like, the fear is your quarterbacks are going to be worse than Matthew Stafford. He's going to be worse than Jay Cutler. And so teams reluctantly pay these guys way too much money for, you know, guys that are just, they're average. They're good. He's a good quarterback. You're not going to win anything with that guy. But you were never going to win with Jay Cutler. Like, you're not going to win with Matthew Stafford. You know, I mean, people are talking about Matthew Stafford. Where's he going to be next year? Maybe he could have a Carson Palmer-like, you know, resurrection. Go somewhere else with a better team and a better fit. The thing with Wentz is, man, they paid him a boatload of money. They're kind of stuck with him. Doesn't look like they can get out of it anytime soon. And now you're wondering, you know, what do you have? Well, what do you have in the guy? He's getting sacked. He's throwing picks. You know, his team's no good. And, you know, what he did early to earn that big contract, he's not showing anything capable of that he's capable of doing that again.
It's amazing. I saw a story today on ProFootballTalk.com. Took a look at the passer rating number, right? And in the last three seasons, he had a passer rating of 98. It was above 98, okay? This year, his passer rating is at 73.4. And they looked, and it actually was Ian Rappaport who looked in the history of the league, quarterbacks whose passer rating have fallen that far below their combined rating over the previous three seasons. Gambo, you're talking about guys who retired because of it. Guys who were so old. I'm being serious. Peyton Manning, right? Peyton Manning in 2015 saw his passer rating drop 40 points from his three-year average to his current, so he retired. Joe Theismann saw his passer rating drop 32 points, so he retired. Brett Favre saw his drop 24.5 points, so he retired in 2010. Carson Wentz isn't retiring, but I'm just saying that to kind of paint this picture of just how far he's fallen from the 3 years and the numbers that he was putting up over the last 3 years to where he is now. It's the kind of fall that have led guys like Theismann and Peyton Manning and Brett Favre to call it quits, to say, oh, that's it, I'm done, I'm shot, my career's over, I can't play this game anymore. Wentz isn't going to do that, but that's how big
no, those guys were old.
Suffered this year.
Favre was old. Peyton Manning was old. This Carson Wentz is 27 years old.
I know.
He's 27. You're talking about guys that were old. They were finished. They were done. Like, they couldn't do it anymore.
Brett
Favre was 41
years old when he did it. Yeah, Brett Favre was 41 when he did it. And you mentioned the sacks. He is on pace right now, Carson Wentz, to get sacked 67 times this season. That would be the most since David Carr back in 2005.
I wouldn't listen. I might sit him. I know that they're still in this thing. I'm going to get to the point. And that's the thing, right? I mean, if somebody was running away with this division and you were 3-7-1, you might be like, all right, listen, I'm not going to let you take this beating until I get an offensive line. Because I always believe this. Like, there's only so many hits that you have in you. You know, there's only so many you can take. And now you're looking at a guy. This is by far the most sacks. I was just looking at his numbers now. This is by far the most sacks he's ever taken in his career. And it's only going to get worse. And you wonder about, you know, being punch drunk. You worry about the damage that all these hits do to you. So I do think that there is a point where you're like, man, this isn't worth it to keep playing. If he's your quarterback, get him the hell out of there. Play Jalen Hurts. Don't let him. Don't let your investment in him take this to continue to take this beating that he's taking. Listen, he had a lot more talent around him those first couple of years. He did. He had a lot more talent around him, especially at the wide receiver spot with Alshon Jeffrey and a younger DeSean Jackson, and Ertz was better than he is now. So
I do think part of it is the talent thing. But you do this is always the adage with this, right? You see a guy, you think he's good, you check back in 3 years and he's not. You're like, what the hell happened? Like, how does that happen? You think, okay, it's just because a guy has a good year doesn't mean he's arrived. Oh, okay, he's great. Okay, he's good. Just give him all that money. Yeah, he's good. No, you know, guys regress. Guys go backwards. Guys peak. And that could be the case with some of these guys. Now, you look at Baker Mayfield this year, right? He had a good first season, and then he had a really bad second season. And now you look at him, he's playing good again. Okay, all right. You know, Baker Mayfield is, you know, he's got 17 touchdowns, 7 picks. He's only been sacked 17 times. He's thrown for 2,100 yards, and they're 8-3, and they're probably going to go to the playoffs. So Baker Mayfield is back on track after what was a disastrous year. Can Wentz get back on track? Big question mark.
Yeah, big question mark. When we come back, not only is Monty Williams looking forward to what Chris Paul will bring to the equation, the head coach is also looking at CP3 as a chance for Coach to make up for some of his previous mistakes. You'll hear why coming up on the Burns and Gambo Show.